Now it's time for very serious football talk with the man who met his wife on a blind date, chaperoned by his parents.
They actually came along on the first date with us. There was a...
No!
I rode in the back seat. I was 22.
The man who needs to take a minute to remember the names of all of his children.
Do all of your kids have the same first letter?
No, actually. Let me think. Do any of them? Tucker, Mason, Cole, Isabel, and Lucas.
The man who can defend you in court, but will probably choose not to.
I'll cop to this on a public setting right now. I am an aggressive cuddler in a consensual sense.
Comma, officer.
Good grief, he's a pastor too? When does this guy sleep?
You will find Seth Kaiser everywhere except for in his or your bed, because not only does he not sleep, he's also a faithful husband. So that's important.
It's Seth Kaiser of The Athletic on Almost Entirely Sports.
Finally, a Tuesday with actual football to talk about. No preseason, Seth Kaiser of The Athletic. No practice, no training camp, real actual game film. Can you even contain your excitement?
I can't, honestly. I sound like I'm containing it really well.
You do.
But on the inside, I don't know if you've looked at my Twitter today, but I am ready to party.
I have looked at your Twitter today, and I know that you are doing some Patrick Mahomes charting over the course of this day, and it seems like you're in a good place because of that.
Oh, I'm in a great place because of it. I got two throws in before I got to chart a franchise quarterback throw, and it was one that surprised me, too.
Yeah.
Those were even better. Oftentimes, when you go back and look at the film, someone played worse than you thought or whatever. But with Mahomes, it's almost constantly like, holy crap, he was even better than I thought.
We were talking a little bit before we actually started the segment, and we were talking about that first throw that you're charting as a franchise throw. And I didn't realize it at the time, but it's the touchdown to Sammy Watkins, the first touchdown to Sammy Watkins. And
yep.
I was watching Miles Jack watching Patrick Mahomes, and you said, do you think that's a no-look pass? Because I looked at it again, and Mahomes is looking to his right and then throws across his body a little bit. And you know how I know that I think that it was fooling the defenders is because Miles Jack was running to his right with Travis Kelce. And then as the ball was coming out of Mahomes' hand, he plants on his right foot, goes back to his left, and tries to go in front of Travis Kelce. And then the ball goes about 3 or 4 feet to their right to Sammy Watkins, ultimately for a touchdown.
Right. Anyone who says, well, that's not really a no-look pass, I'm not sure. You know, he set the bar so high,
yeah,
like what we talked about. That I'm not sure. But I would just say the professional middle linebacker who was on the field,
yeah,
he sure thought it was a no-look pass.
He sure did.
So
I'll take that. I think that counts.
Yeah.
I'll take his
opinion.
Yeah,
I think that counts.
So obviously you can read everything Seth does on The Athletic. You already have a film review up of Sammy Watkins. You're working on the Mahomes charting. And we didn't actually talk about your bold predictions last week because I think it came out between, you know, within the last 7 days or whatever. And I actually want to revisit some of those and see how one game has changed them, because I think there are a few that you're going to feel more strongly about.
Sure.
So I'm going to revisit that also. And we should mention now, if you want to hear more of these dulcet tones of mine and Seth's, plus a smattering of Nate Taylor doing impressions of the entire NFL on a weekly basis, the Times Ours podcast is available in the Athletic app. Mondays are available wherever you get the show. Just look for Times Ours. And Fridays exclusively given to the subscribers of the Athletic. And so far, that's been fun.
Oh, yeah. I've had a blast with it. It's been a lot of fun. I love talking to you guys. It's a very loose format, and I appreciate that. It gives us time to just kind of hang out, although we keep going long, but I think you and I do that anyway.
Yeah, no, we do. And then adding Nate, like, listen, whenever Nate is, like, clear, far and away, the least long-winded person in a conversation, you're learning something about the other people in that conversation.
It's not a good sign. Just to plug something really quick for anyone who's listening to this, when you're listening, you know, you whether it's on the podcast or whatever, on tomorrow, my film review is going to go up. And this year, much like last year, it's not going to be just Mahomes. I don't know if you remember, Josh, last year, about midway through the season, my editor was like, hey, you know what you should do is you start charting Mahomes and review a bunch of other things. I was like, wow,
right.
that seems great.
Sounds like more work for me.
And so, Yeah, yeah, more work. I love it. And I review this stuff anyway. So it's not just going to be Mahomes. I'm also going to look at Mecole Hardman. I'm going to look at Thornhill. I'm going to look at the pass rush. Going to look at the pass pro, the run defense, and a couple more things as well. So this is going to be a big one. So anyway, this is the time to subscribe to The Athletic, because these are going to be monsters every week as I try to dive into some of the big questions people have about the why. I'm super, super excited about it.
It also looks like today might be the last day to get the NFL kickoff special rate. I saw you tweeted about that earlier today. You go to theathletic.com/NFL kickoff. And you can also check out the pinned tweet on my timeline specific to the podcast. That'll take you there also. So all that being said and all that being laid out there, let's talk a little bit about the game, because we actually have a game to discuss. And there's a lot, man. Like, there was
a lot
in there. You did the film review on Sammy Watkins. Was he the biggest takeaway from that game, or was there something else?
There were so many takeaways from that game. The more film I go through, the more there is. And a part of it, we have a tendency to either over or underreact to week one.
Yeah.
So most people overreact because, let's face it, teams are just now, you know, figuring out scheme and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's new. Everything's kind of weird. No one's seen this stuff before. And this stuff starts to even out, you know, about 8 weeks into the season. However, some people, because they're trying so hard not to overreact, they tend to underreact.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's so many things to take from it. Watkins, for me, is a big takeaway, and that's the reason he was the first thing I wrote about. And plus, his plays were so obviously great that they had a bunch of replays, so I could do it without the benefit of the All-22,
right?
Because they were kind enough to provide it in the broadcast.
Right.
For
the first 54 minutes of the game or so, I should note.
Yeah. Not the end. Who needs to see the end? You know, that's what they say about, like, you know what, I was going to make a bunch of references to movies, but you wouldn't have gotten any of them, so never mind. So the thing with Watkins, the biggest takeaway with him is that extra dimension that he adds is that, I mean, he's tough to cover. He always has been. But his ability after the catch is even better than I had remembered or thought. He looks incredibly explosive. He looks really tough to tackle. He's got great field vision. It's a whole nother element to the offense, because when he catches the ball, there were multiple times where it looked like, oh, that's going to be a nice 10-yard game. Oh, no, wait, it's a 20-yard game.
Yep.
And he does it with quickness, or he does it with strength. I mean, it's so much fun to watch. So he is one of the biggest takeaways, absolutely. A lot of things are kind of a to-be-determined that we're going to need to see over the next few weeks. But Watkins, he is ready to have a monster year.
So let's go ahead and let's dig in on him a little bit then, because, again, the film review's up right now, and it's hard for that not to be at least one of the first things you take away because of everything you just said. Like, it was exceptional. And I said immediately on the postgame show here on 810, like, and I said this on Times Ours also, it's one of the best games I've ever seen from a receiver in a Chiefs uniform. Like, it was a genuinely incredible game. It was efficient, but it wasn't all bombs. Like, it wasn't like he was just running in a straight line and the ball hitting him in the hands. He did stuff with the ball and got open. And honestly, I might have been most impressed by, I think, the third touchdown, the one that was in the red zone, where he just sort of shoves Jalen Ramsey and then spins around and the ball's there. It was, all of that being said, I feel more blown away by the game that he had after reading the film review and after looking at the clips all chopped and slowed down and everything. So without the ability to throw to the visual here, Seth, can you explain how his game became more impressive to you after watching it more closely?
So the thing that becomes impressive is the subtle things that he did. So let's just take a look at the first touchdown, because we'll be talking about that with Mahomes, too, about why that play was more impressive all the way around. So we'll be very on theme.
Yes.
That first touchdown, when you watch it in real time, when you watch it in the broadcast, you know, you're excited, you're jumping around. And so it basically looks like, man, you know, the Jags defense really blew it, and Robinson threw a great block, and he, you know, he got six.
Mm-hmm.
When you slow it down and you look at what he really did, for one, the way he snatches the ball out of the air, catches with his hands, always does a great job with that. There was a safety incoming as he caught the ball, and he somehow, and even in slow motion it looks kind of quick, he snatched the ball and knew to duck underneath that safety, so he didn't take a hit, so he was able to keep running without being slowed down at all. And then he just freezes Jalen Ramsey in place. I mean, this is Sub-Zero from Mortal Kombat stuff. Just like, just freezes him in place with a juke.
Yeah.
And then takes off. And his explosion, his ability to outrun the defense is apparent there. He's not Tyreek Hill. He's not even Mecole Hardman in terms of that. But his combination of quickness and speed is just frightening. He knows how to move. So when you see those little things that he was doing, like the touchdown that you referenced against against Ramsey, and he really victimized Ramsey a few times.
Really,
he victimized both of their corners.
Yeah.
Multiple times.
Yeah, he owned
it
that
was
game.
Super impressive.
Yeah.
For one, I don't know, just on a side note, the Jags, they barely played any press coverage, which is like the one thing the Patriots were able to do.
Yeah.
I don't know what the Jags were thinking. I'm assuming other teams will have a different approach. Just worth noting, because that bothered Watkins against Gilmore last year in the AFC Championship. Anyway, well, you know what? But to that point, Ramsey tried to play him really physical
on that touchdown. I'm watching it right now. I was going to say, well, Seth, I have an example of it not working that well.
Watkins just chucks him to the side. So much so that I've got Jags fans in my mentions just upset. You can't push him to the ground like that. And I'm like, why?
Yeah.
Like,
yes.
you tell me a rule that says he can. I'm like, what?
That's not how that works.
That's not how football works.
Horrifying.
It's prescriptive, not prescriptive.
Right.
You don't have to. There's no rule. You
Here's
know,
everything you can do in
field.
Football. That would be a very long rule book.
That would be an incredibly long rule book. And so it was just, I mean, he just throws him to the side. I think Watkins is more prepared for physicality. And, I mean, that was a great, great play because he also then got himself turned around and made a beeline for the sideline. Mahomes saw it, got the ball there before Ramsey could recover. Just a great play. Watkins just slowed down, looking at everything. He was making things happen. Now, Andy Reid's offense obviously provided some stuff for him. That second touchdown was a thing of beauty. That design, you know. And I think that might have been Ramsey that blew the coverage on that, too.
I'm watching it again because I think it might have been. I'm trying to find it right now.
It was Ramsey that blew the coverage. It looked like some variant of maybe cover three. I can't remember. I don't have it in front of me. But Ramsey just played a really bad game. And, you know, look, Ramsey's a great corner. These things are going to happen. The Chiefs offense made him and Miles Jack look stupid for the limited time Miles Jack played.
Right, for his cameo appearance, yeah.
Right, yeah, his cameo appearance in Travis Kelce's movie, basically. he was the guy getting posterized in a dunk poster.
Yeah, that's
true. I mean, Miles Jack had a rough, rough day. Anyway, so Watkins, he got helped out by the design and that kind of stuff. But he, every time he got the ball, he improved on the play.
Yeah.
He didn't just benefit. He improved on it. And that's what's scary is Reed is already so good. It's a lot like with Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce. What makes him so dangerous is they're already in a great offensive system.
Yep.
But they have the physical and mental ability to improve on every situation. And it's just, I mean, it is scary how good that offense. That first 20 plays there before Mahomes got hobbled, I think it was like 15 or so, or maybe 10, I don't remember. That offense, I was watching, I was like, oh my God, they're going to score 100 points.
Yeah.
And they might have.
Yeah.
Life is good, man.
It really is. And one thing on the Jack and Ramsey playing both playing bad games. Everyone who covers the NFL, I think, would say, those guys are both very good players. Whenever you have both of those guys, quote unquote, have a bad day at the same time, I think the camera at that point, whenever that sentence is said, should just pan over to Andy Reid on the sidelines to give you a wry smile. Because I don't think that that's completely structured over them making mistakes. I think that's an incredible game that like was able to make them look like average or below average players.
Absolutely. Ramsey had a really tough time. He played a better game against the Chiefs last year. And the Jags defense in general did. And here's the thing. That defense, Jack got tossed relatively early. They were getting dragged well before that.
Yes. Yes, they were.
And now they don't have Telvin Smith, which is a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And I get that because he's talented. But it's not like he's any better in coverage than Miles Jack.
No.
And Kelce was just having his life. It was so bad and so funny. Gave me the opportunity to talk smack about Travis Kelce against any linebacker in the league.
I saw those tweets. Those are very good.
And so They also, though, they added Josh Allen, who, mm-hmm. by the way, looks really good. How yeah. he fell, I mean, it wasn't even that far that he fell. It was like the low, like top 10 or something like that. I don't remember when the Jags picked.
Yeah, they were around the teens, I think.
But people really overthought that because Josh Allen looked terrific.
And people were tweeting, he went 7, so yeah, people were tweeting me about that before the year because I said I wasn't worried about the Jags, and they sent me a clip of Josh Allen mauling some poor third-string tackle in a preseason game. And I said, that's great, yeah. but if he looks like that against Mitch Schwartz, you're right. The Chiefs will have a problem. I don't think the Chiefs will have a problem. Like, the sure. amount of one-on-one sort of stuff and the amount of excellent players the Chiefs seemed to negate in this game was crazy.
Absolutely. And with Allen and Campbell, they did a really great job on some stunts. With that combination of players, it's tough, which we should talk about at some point, why yeah. the Chiefs didn't go that route with Jones and Clark.
Yes.
Because they've got, I personally think the Chiefs have a combination that's even better than Allen and Campbell.
Mm.
Not by a lot,
yeah.
but by a little. And they, for some reason, aren't doing those same actions, which is frustrating.
Okay, so we don't have a ton of time here tonight, so let's go. I'm gonna try to get your most bite-sized answers to a handful of offensive questions before we go to the defensive side. Does that work?
That works.
Okay, the running back room. LeSean McCoy is excellent. He's got 8 yards to carry. Damien Williams.
Someone should have written about him.
Someone should have. I don't know why nobody explained why LeSean McCoy looked bad. Absolutely no exaggeration. I don't think there is another thing that you have written that I have referenced more than the stat about LeSean McCoy having 60% dead on arrival snaps in Buffalo last year. I think I cited that on 15 different radio shows this week.
Well, people need to know.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden, it's so funny. The announcers, Chiefs Twitter, mm-hmm. everyone is just like, wow, he's got some burst. And it's like, I'm telling you, like, this, I don't just make stuff up. Like,
it's just people telling on themselves, man. It's people might as well tweet, I don't subscribe to The Athletic, is what they should be tweeting in those moments.
Yeah, anyone who subscribed to The Athletic should not have been surprised that McCoy looked as good as he did. But anyway, I interrupted you. Go on.
So he looked great. Damien Williams was pretty effective. The running game was, I mean, they ended up with 26 carries, counting a carry for Hill, one for Mahomes, and I think a kneel down from Matt Moore. I didn't see it. But they run the ball a little bit. The game also is clearly in their hands late in the game. What did you think of the running game altogether, specifically McCoy and Williams?
I thought they did a really nice job. McCoy obviously had a lot more success carrying the ball than Williams. But, you know, Williams had his average dragged down at the end. But when you're nearing the end of the game, you know, and you run the ball 3 or 4 times for, like, 3 yards total,
yeah.
unless you ran the ball another 25 times previously, that really hurts your average.
Yep.
So McCoy is clearly, in my opinion, and you know I like Damien Williams.
Yes.
McCoy is clearly the better runner of the two. He's got way looser hips. He's able to turn and cut more quickly. And Williams is a pretty quick guy.
Yeah.
But it's just McCoy is special. He has been for years. And it's funny, you know, people watching the way that he sets up blockers and then, wow, it's like, yeah, it's LeSean McCoy.
Right.
Had the Chiefs signed him last year, everyone would have been freaking out.
Yes.
And this just goes to show how quickly the NFL moves on. McCoy looks great. Williams, though, was super effective as a receiver.
Yes.
And I think that's going to keep up. I think they love him as a receiver. And especially with Hill down, I think you're going to see more targets for Williams than ever. And I love the fact that they've got two guys they can trot out there that they trust completely. I think they trust Thompson, too. But I think it's going to be tough for him to see the field because I think both Williams and McCoy will play well. But I do think McCoy is going to start seeing more and more of the carries in all likelihood.
You mentioned Tyreek Hill. Why will the Chiefs miss Tyreek Hill? Not like because he's good, but what will they have to do differently without him for the next few weeks? And then how much does that change your expectations for this offense?
Well, there's got to be a bit of a different target distribution.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't target Mecole Hardman or DeMarcus Robinson as often as you would target Tyreek Hill, and you can't target him the same way. Defenders are going to play those guys differently than they play Hill. A couple of those easy, you know, 8 to 10 yard gains that Hill got early against Ramsey, one of which he got hurt on,
mm-hmm.
that happens because he's Tyreek Hill. He gets easy money because defenders have to play 15 yards off him.
Yeah.
You're not going to get that same stuff. So there's going to be different. There's going to be a difference there. There's going to be a difference in the ability to get open quickly, get off the line against press coverage. So So what you're going to have to see is probably a little bit more of a controlled offense, a little bit more, maybe a little bit less improv stuff, because Hill is great at that.
Mm-hmm.
But you might actually see Robinson be the target on more of those improv plays. So I think what you're going to see, if I were to guess, I think you'll see a redistribution of targets. I think Kelce and Watkins were always going to see a ton of targets regardless.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that really raises their ceiling anymore. I think the guys that are going to see more run, they're going to be Damian Williams in the receiving game, LeSean McCoy in the receiving game, and Mecole Hardman. I think those are the three guys that will see kind of the rising tide that lifts all boats there.
So I imagine you're going to do this anyway, and I'm really excited to see this in the Mahomes piece you're working on now. I want to know pre-injury and post-injury Mahomes, and maybe pre-Tyreek Hill injury and post-Tyreek Hill injury, but whenever you talk about being more calculated and less improv, I felt like we saw that on Sunday whenever Mahomes got his ankle sprained. It seemed like everything happened way more quickly there, and Patrick Mahomes looked less like Patrick Mahomes that we saw last year and more like Tom Brady. Legitimately, he legit looked kind of like Tom Brady. Things were happening quickly. He wasn't really getting hit all that often after the injury, even as he stayed in the pocket, didn't move very much, and even the downfield stuff seemed a little limited because it didn't seem like he was stepping into his throws quite as confidently with that little bit of a ginger ankle. And he still has the arm strength to throw the ball far. I don't know how much is going to affect him against Oakland, but what did you see the Chiefs do on Sunday pre and post ankle sprain?
I'm in the middle of charting the snaps right now. What I think I'm going to see is a lot lower depth of target.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I'd bet almost anything on that. Shorter throws, quicker throws, less long developing stuff, the kind of stuff that they were using early. Just because you can do the long developing stuff with Mahomes healthy, because even if there's some pressure, he can move around and escape it. And plus, with a sprained ankle, you don't want to make it any worse, all that stuff. And you could tell there were a few snaps that you could see Mahomes was playing it safe. You could see it.
Yeah.
He was not, he wasn't going to run. He wasn't going to step into something like he might normally. He just wasn't going to be quite as daring as normal. I'm assuming Andy Reid had a conversation with him that was something like, dude, we're winning.
Yeah, right.
Do not. Right. I'll keep you in this game. I swear if you get hurt, you know, like just don't be stupid. Think about, you know, next week and every week after. So I think you're going to see more up-tempo stuff, more Mahomes in the pocket. I think it just depends on how his ankle feels. I think that affected the offense more than Hill going down. I think with Hill going down, obviously Hardman's not going to be ready to take on that much variety of routes. But, and I should mention, DeMarcus Robinson I think will get more run too, because he knows more of the positions. He knows more of the routes. So I don't think you're going to see a lot of change in this developing down the field stuff, because Mecole Hardman can do that stuff.
Yeah,
he can run the deep posts and then the goes and all the stop and goes down the field. He can run these deep routes, and so they can still do the long developing stuff. I just think if Mahomes is still hobbled, you'll see more quick hitters.
Okay, so this one, listen, you have a lot of gifts in this world, but one of your gifts has never been brevity. So I'm going to say I need a number right here. Level of concern with the offensive line 1 to 10.
3.
That's exactly what I thought you were going to say. I didn't even ask you that. I could have just projected it. Okay, let's go to the other side of the ball. Also, the Chiefs cut Byron Pringle, and they bring back DeAnthony Thomas. Give me a single word to describe that move.
Eh.
Perfect. I was going to go with weird, but that's fine also. Let's go to the defensive side. You mentioned what the Jags were doing with their entire suite of pass rushers and what the Chiefs weren't doing with theirs. The pass rush wasn't terribly effective yesterday. Chris Jones broke Nick Foles' collarbone, and then Gardner Minshew came in with his mustache and his jockstrap stretches and everything. You have to read that story on Twitter if you haven't seen it. I know you've seen it. I'm telling the listeners. If you haven't seen the phrase jockstrap stretches is probably a little bit of an issue for most people mentally, but it's even more horrifying whenever you read the details. He comes in and is relatively unbothered, looks pretty good back there. Not a lot of action from that pass rush. What did you make of that?
You know, here's something that's worth noting. You know, the only drive that you've got Nick Foles in there for 2 drives,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
The first drive, they were able to get a little bit of pressure on him, and they got a 3-and-out. Second drive, they got him to 3rd down. He had to make a really nice play, escaping pressure. And then I think Anthony Hitchens, for some unknown reason, followed Chris Conley like 40 yards down the field rather than protecting the middle of the field. But that's neither here nor there. Maybe that was his job. I don't know. I'm not here to say assignments. So, although he probably shouldn't have done that. But anyway, so he had to escape pressure there. And then, yeah, I mean, he made a great throw under pressure.
Oh, yeah.
So you're talking about a drive where just because the result wasn't a good one doesn't mean pressure wasn't there.
Agreed.
So they were actually getting a fair amount of pressure on Foles early. You know, you don't break someone's collarbone without pressure.
For sure. What happened after that, I guess, would be my question.
Sure. After that, they were getting rid of the ball. I think the average time that I saw with next-gen stats, and I'm going to talk about this in the article, was about 2.5 seconds, I think it was.
I buy that.
The fastest sacks in the NFL last year, some of them were under 2.5 seconds, but not many of them. Mm. It's tough to get to the quarterback that quickly. And you know what? Minshew was getting rid of the ball quickly.
He was.
Here's the deal. The Chiefs had a couple of coverage breakdowns that they've got to look at. You know, Bashaud Breeland on one, Charvarius Ward on more than one. And, yeah, I wasn't thrilled. But they really, Minshew got rid of the ball quickly. He made the correct hot reads on blitzes. And he, generally speaking, threw really accurate passes. He made a few really nice plays. Like that last touchdown he scored when I finally got a chance to see the All-22, he made a really great back shoulder throw.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes you just get beat. And I think because people see the name, oh, well, the Chiefs defense must have played terrible. You know what? I don't care what the name says on the back of the jersey. I care what the film says. And what the film shows on more plays than not, Minshew just played well. Mm-hmm. I personally think he played better than Nick Foles would have had he played the full game.
I think that's wild, and not that you're wrong. That's a crazy sentence to say out loud because of the way some people feel about Nick Foles. And I don't hate what you're saying. I just think it's kind of funny that you said that out loud. are you on the program at all this week?
I am.
Tell Sarin that. I always want to hear what happens after that. He loves Nick Foles more than I think he loves his kids, and it seems like he loves his kids. I think he loves Nick Foles like a child, at the very least. So I'll be curious to hear that conversation. Don't cite me with inciting that, though, please.
And Nick Foles at times plays tremendously well, and at other times he does not.
Yeah, the throw he made was incredible. He wasn't in the game long enough to look like the other half of Nick Foles. I'm with you on that front. I'm a Nick Foles truther. But that's just me. And maybe I'm a Gardner Minshew truther also. Okay, you mentioned the cornerbacks, and here's what I want to do. I want you right now, I want you to take your phone off your ear, look at the time, and tell me how long we have to go through your preseason predictions and try to get you out of here.
We have 5 minutes.
Okay, here we go. So you did some bold predictions and some not-so-bold predictions. I want to go through all of them and see how they change after one game. We're going to spend more time on one of them, I can tell already. Coin flip, Mahomes equals or surpasses last year's statistical output. There's no Tyreek Hill for a few weeks. His ankle's a little bit gimpy. He also threw for 1 million yards and 3 touchdowns yesterday. How do you feel about that prediction now?
A little bit better.
The next one. Go ahead.
That was the Jags. I think he's got a good chance.
I think you're 100% right. You feel better than a coin flip right now? 60-40?
Yeah. We'll call it a coin flip that's slightly weighted in my favor.
Sure thing. The Chiefs' defensive line will account for 35 or more sacks.
I'm still going to call that a sure thing. You know, they need to have a pretty good stretch down the run, but at least Ogba got on the – he got there.
Did that happen after the cameras went out?
No, that happened earlier in the game. I think the third quarter, Ogba got home. And really, Chris Jones had some really good pressures, I mean, including that last touchdown. He had the guy right in his lap, and Minshew just got rid of the ball very quickly.
Yeah.
And so – quarterbacks are going to be doing that against them quite a bit. They're going to need to figure it out. They need to start running more stunts and twists. I have no idea why they didn't. They ran barely any. It was like a Bob Sutton type thing up there.
How dare you say those words? and the thing that's going to come down to is one of the topics we're saving here. Because if the pass rush doesn't get home, they get rid of it quickly. Defensive backs have to be able to cover their dude for like 2.5 seconds, right? Like, that seems fair. Okay, never mind.
That's fair.
Long shot, Juan Thornhill Pro Bowl. I think you're just playing CYA from your previous Juan Thornhill predictions.
I would say a little better than a long shot at this point. I like the way he played, even though he didn't make any pop plays against the pass. He covered a lot of ground on some of those sideline passes and run plays. I think he's going to be a really good get.
And he has a real chance to have, like, 8 picks or something. I like that as a long shot. I think that's fun. Coin flip, Mecole Hardman surpasses 600 yards receiving. Got to feel good about this without a few games of Tyreek Hill, right?
Yes, I feel pretty good about that.
Long shot, Chiefs win the Super Bowl.
I feel better about that than ever.
Okay, and now we're going to pull people back by the sure thing. The pass defense is going to struggle. How do you feel about that one, Seth?
I am more certain than ever. Look, if it was their first game, they're doing a new scheme, I get all that. But these blown coverages, that'll kill you in the NFL. And it doesn't matter if you only do it, you know, six times a game. Mm-hmm. NFL quarterbacks, for the most part, especially in ones that are any good, are going to find that. And the problem with those plays, and we saw this, those are the big plays. Those are the 40-yard plays. Yeah. Those are the touchdowns. You cannot have blown coverages, even if your pass defense overall stinks. And here's the tough part for me. Outside of blown coverages and a few really great plays by Minshew, I think overall they played better than they did last year. They were swarming to the ball better.
Yeah.
I think the coverage actually looked all right. But you can't have blown coverages.
And so, really quick here, we'll get you out of here on this. Synthesize all this stuff with the defense for me really quick. Because I'm saying, you know, the Chiefs spent this offseason to make their pass rush so good that they could get away with some question marks in the defensive backfield. Kendall Fuller feels like a bit of a question mark, at least with how Steve Spagnuolo sees him. Tre'Davious Ward is one. Bashaud Breeland came in as one, but has looked really good. And Mo Claiborne is a question mark. There are a lot of question marks there. The safeties aren't. I think you feel pretty good about Thornhill and certainly about Matthew, although he didn't do a lot yesterday. But he's that right now, having a safety not do a lot is actually a good thing for the Chiefs. But synthesize where the whole state of the defense is for you right now in this moment.
I'm very cautiously optimistic that it'll be better than last year by a fair margin, but I'm pretty pessimistic about it being more than okay.
Raiders beating the Broncos last night. 1-10, how hilarious?
11. I find that hilarious. Mostly because, you know, it's such a, you know, Raiders fans didn't even expect, they didn't expect to be good.
No.
They're distracted by all this whatever stuff. And, you know, and then the Broncos fans in the meantime, I've had a lot of Broncos fans tell me that, you know, with, you know, a big problem was quarterback last year. And, well, we fixed that. I'm like, did you though? Did you really?
Joe Flacco fixing problems is so funny to me as a thought, as a concept.
Absolutely. Oh. And so, I think it's hilarious. We'll see. You know, I also think it's kind of a good thing because I think that, you know, maybe gets the Raiders' confidence up, gets them thinking, you know, hey, you know, we've got this. And that'll just make it all the more satisfying if the Chiefs go in there and blow them out in their stadium.
I won't ask you to predict that for us now because we're a few days away. And also, because I will talk to you again on Friday. And you're like, wait, hold on, I'm listening right now. I'm not going to hear Seth on Friday. Well, you could if you subscribe to The Athletic. You can listen to the Times Ours podcast with me, Seth, and Nate Taylor. We'll talk about that Raiders game over there. We'll talk to you back here, though, again next Tuesday. Thank you, Seth.
Thanks for having me.
Seth Kizer of The Athletic. You can read his stuff up there, including the Sammy Watkins film review coming soon, the Patrick Mahomes charting and film review, plus everything else talked about that's showing up there. The Times RS podcast with me, him, and Nate, Mondays and Fridays up on The Athletic. And you can follow him on Twitter, at RealMNChiefsFan, where he'll tweet out the little tastes of the video clips and the breakdowns and everything. And we talk to him here every Tuesday, of course, right here on Almost Entirely Sports.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
I think we had a Patrick Mahomes jersey over in the 810 studio.
We did. I know we
I don't
did.
Know what's happened to that.
Shh.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It was a medium, so I'm currently on a starvation diet so I can fit into it.
With Joshua Briscoe.
I mean,
we had a Patrick Mahomes jersey that just disappeared? Woo, spooky.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
A packed Tuesday show continues here on Almost Entirely Sports. Thanks for joining us. We've obviously got a weird schedule with football around us here on 810. So if you're looking for more AES, I don't blame you. But also, we're going to work on some creative ideas to make sure you're still hearing this show and all of its beauty and misery plenty. So if you're not subscribed yet to Almost Entirely Sports, wherever you get your podcast, if you're just listening to this over the radio, I would really love it if you'd go subscribe. Wherever you get your podcast, just search for Almost Entirely Sports, and we might be bringing you some stuff exclusively there throughout this football season. But now that we have a little bit of time here following Seth Kizer, one of the things that he mentioned in that last segment that I think is maybe the most interesting, and it's one thing where I'm willing to be a little bit swayed within the pass rush discussion, and we've talked about this. I talked about this in the postgame show, talked about it earlier. Within the pass rush altogether, being ineffective against the Jags and against Gardner Minshew. It was a little effective against Nick Foles. It broke Nick Foles' collarbone. But against Gardner Minshew, it was happening very quickly, which is something, you know, Seth brings up. It's looking at like 2.5 seconds from snap to release of the football. And that's really hard to get home that quickly on. If you want to find optimism there, I understand. In fact, I'll give you optimism first. I'll give you pessimism shortly after. Getting a quarterback in 2.5 seconds is really, really hard. Frank Clark not getting there in 2.5 seconds is okay. I understand it. I would like to see some more creativity, as Seth mentioned, with Chris Jones and Frank Clark together. I'd like to see the middle, especially Chris Jones, getting to the quarterback more often. Now, he broke the collarbone of the starting quarterback, so I don't know how much more you could ask from him. Like, that happened very early, obviously, but that was an incredible play by him. Well, I mean, at least an important play by him, I should say. And he hit the quarterback legally, and everything happened as it should. It just also happened to break the bone of Nick Foles, you know? So, I mean, that obviously that sucks. But he hit the quarterback there in a way that was also still allowing a touchdown. So maybe an incredible play is not as accurate as, again, maybe a very, very important and very, very impactful play. Regardless, though, it wasn't a terribly effective pass rush or terribly impactful pass rush outside of the Foles drives. And here's where I will try to live in the middle before I go full negative Nancy. The Chiefs are just getting into this new system, and Frank Clark and Chris Jones are just working together for the first time in a game that matters. And they didn't work together much in the preseason either. But if you're the Chiefs coming into this season, with all the issues you have in the secondary, you bring in two safeties, but the corners you bring in are Bashaud Breeland, who was pretty much available last year, and whatever reason it didn't work out, I don't know. Breeland said he wanted to be in Kansas City last year, so again, you can read into that however you want, I suppose. And they bring in Mo Claiborne, who won't be around until week 5. They say, you know, give a little vote of confidence in at least giving Tre'Davious Ward the first 4 weeks. The first guy, if someone gets hurt right now, is Rashad Fenton. Kendall Fuller gets essentially demoted. I think he played a little over 80% of the snaps on Sunday, which shows how often a slot corner is on the field in the NFL in 2019. But your best corner not being out there for about 20% of the snaps is still weird. Bashaud Breeland looked really good in this game, and he looked good in the preseason. But it's still, again, kind of a wild card. We went over this with Seth. There are a lot of questions in there. If you believe in that defensive backfield, those cornerbacks specifically, you have to think they're not going to be asked to cover for more than 3 seconds or so. If you're investing the way that you did in the pass rush and leaving the cornerbacks where they are. I said, and I've played both sides of this coin, and honestly, I still don't know where I fall. During the offseason, we looked at some of those analytics that were saying that the thing that's more indicative of a good defense is a defense with good cornerbacks, good cornerback play, as opposed to a good pass rush. I also understand that the cornerback group is really volatile, and that paying a lot of money, like Jalen Ramsey got pretty well torched on Sunday. Sammy Watkins was exceptional. Tyreek Hill was beating him until he broke Tyreek Hill's entire, you know, midsection. And so I understand that is something that can largely be determined by volatility. And so I'm not even here to totally, like, rage against the decisions made among the corners just yet. I'm certainly aware of it, and I want to give it some time. But giving it time doesn't mean not paying attention. And paying attention now, I think, has to look towards Gardner Minshew was able to get the ball in 2.5 seconds, throw the ball 25 times, complete 22 of those passes, and pick up 275 yards. I'm not really worried about Gardner Minshew. I'm not really worried about Carr, Lamar Jackson. You know, the guys that are coming. Now, listen, Lamar Jackson looked incredible on Sunday, so maybe I'm off base. But I am worried about Tom Brady. Tom Brady typically gets rid of the ball in less than 2.5 seconds against a pass rush that's making his life more difficult and or against a defensive backfield that is covering that entire suite of weapons very closely, now including Antonio Brown. If you want to give the Jags credit for getting rid of the ball in 2.5 seconds and not blame the pass rush for getting there in 2.5 seconds. I totally understand. But if you think that Gardner Minshew, Leonard Fournette, DJ Chark, Chris Conley, James O'Shaughnessy, D.D. Westbrook, if you think that that group, you see that group, have a pretty good day throwing the ball against this group of corners, what happens whenever that group becomes Tom Brady, Sony Michel, and throwing the ball to all of the backs out of the backfield, including Michel, whatever random running back they sign will catch, you know, 6 passes in the AFC Championship game. Throwing the ball, though, not just out of the backfield quickly, but also to whoever's actually catching passes for the Patriots whenever the Chiefs play them. There's a bit of uncertainty there for a whole variety of reasons. This group struggled at least a little bit with that Jags depth chart. I'm horrified about what it looks like against the Patriots. And I think philosophically, Steve Spagnuolo probably had either had a say over this, or at least it was in agreement with Brett Veach on this, that the way to beat Tom Brady was going to be the thing to focus on building a defense in an offseason. And the way to beat Tom Brady is pressuring him. If he has time, he'll find whoever's open. And I tend to agree with that. But if you don't get pressure on him really, really quickly, and you have cornerbacks basically asking to be targeted, that feels like a bad recipe. I'm not hitting the panic button. I'm not saying the season is over. I'm not here to torpedo any expectations. It was just something evident to me as I was watching the game. I saw trouble there. You know, I saw things going less the way that I was hoping, I suppose, if that's a fragmented, ridiculous sentence. But at the very least, man, you got to be aware of it. And that's where I'm at right now. I'm aware of the problems that showed themselves against this Jags offense that I'm not afraid of. This defense is allegedly pretty good, and this offense, I don't think, even as it looked pretty good on Sunday, this isn't a playoff team in my mind. I mean, they're throwing the ball to DJ Chark and Chris Conley and James O'Shaughnessy and D.D. Westbrook. Leonard Fournette looks pretty good. Gardner Minshew looked pretty good. I don't think this is a playoff team. The Texans lost to the Saints, and I think that is a playoff team. I think those are both playoff teams. Bill O'Brien notwithstanding, the Texans are a better team than the Jags. I feel pretty strongly about that. And I'm not, again, I just want to be super duper clear. I'm not full on obliterating the panic button out of an overwhelming concern that maybe Frank Clark isn't good. He just wasn't really impactful on Sunday. I think he would admit that. I mean, he did admit that. He said, you know, he was asked after the game. He did say he has more picks than Jalen Ramsey, which is awesome. But he said, how do you feel about that game win? You know, it had some first game problems or something like that, is what Clark said. That's fine. Chris Jones made the most impactful play of the defense all day, but I didn't hear a lot from him since then. Again, these are all continued extended concerns that I can't totally turn away from. And with that in mind, that's if I'm going to be negative for a little bit after sad fans and looking at all the great things from this offense, even as it lost Tyreek Hill. If you said, hey, but if you asked me before the season, what's something that undercuts this team? I'd say, well, it's the secondary. If the secondary is as bad as it looked in moments in training camp, that could undercut this team this year. But maybe more concernedly now, I would say probably the pass rush, because if it's not as good as they think it is, this defense is in huge trouble. Huge trouble. And if it's great, the secondary will look fine, and the pass rush will be a menace, and the run defense was better. But the pass rush is going to be the thing that determines how far this defense can go, because Brett Veach told us so. By trading for Frank Clark, by keeping Chris Jones, even if they don't extend him, by bringing in Alex Okafor, by holding on with Tano passing the other way they did. They even tried to invest in Breland Speaks. This organization believes in the power of the pass rush. I'm not against it, but we need to see it sooner rather than later to prove that this defense actually can take a big step forward. If it does take a big step forward, it's going to be thanks to the pass rush, and if it doesn't, it's going to be a problem. That's all. I know that sounded super duper negative. I know. Go listen to the first hour again if you feel sad now. I don't mean to leave you sadly. I'm sorry. It's just, I thought it was something we should talk about. All right, we're out of time. We're back tomorrow from 8 until 10. Happy birthday to girlfriend Renee. Everybody follow all of her social media accounts. She's a model theologian, like everywhere. And only, like, I would say, 1 out of 5 of you who have followed her on all of those things have been creepy. So good job, the other 4 out of 5. Happy birthday, Renee. And bye, Mom.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.